We're going to go ahead and call the meeting of the Finance Administration Committee together. Apologize for just being a few minutes late, but we took a break, and we're now back to finish where we left off. And with that, we need to certify the minutes from certify an executive session that took place a few days ago. Mort?
Yeah, I move that the board certify, to the best of each member's knowledge, and with no individual member dissenting, that at the board's executive session on March 26, 2015, only such matters as are authorized for discussion in executive session under board bylaws Article 10, and only those matters identified in the notice by which the executive session was convened were heard, discussed, or considered by the board.
Second.
Motion and a second. Discussion, hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those in the ayes have it. We have the
minutes. Also, for the record, we did not have an executive session today.
Right. Okay. We have the minutes of March 12th to, we have the agenda for approval for today. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Motion and a second. Discussion, hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Ayes have it. We have the minutes of March 12th meeting for approval.
Approval.
Motion and a second. Discussions, additions, deletions, corrections. Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Ayes have it. That now takes us to the matters that before us today. We have two action items. Actually, we have three items on the agenda today. Two, that's action, and one, informational update. Our first action item is to authorize the general manager to reprogram funds within the FY 2015 capital budget. This action, which does not increase the size of the capital budget, allows the general manager to move funds between projects, which may be required because of timing or schedule changes or changes in cost, both for those requiring more or less funds. That's to be followed by the committee where we'll be asked to approve changes to Metro's grant management policy, which will outline procedures for timely grant applications. And then lastly, the committee will receive its monthly update on Metro's financial management reforms, including continued progress in addressing the FTA's financial management oversight findings, along with a broader picture of Metro's financial status, which will include cash flow and credit availability, grant reimbursements and applications, and the FY 2014 external audit. At this time, I'll turn the floor over to our CFO, Dennis, who will walk us through the discussion of the capital budget reprogramming. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At this point, with your indulgence, I would like to inform the committee that earlier this morning, Metro received final approval for the PREA grant, which is the singular grant outstanding. Thank you. From all of the other outstanding grants, as you will recall, over the last few months, we have been reporting to the board and to this committee that we've made substantial progress with respect to both applying and receiving approvals for all outstanding grants, and this was the remaining piece, and we are suddenly excited with today's approval, and will aggressively engage in the process of seeking reimbursements based on actual expenditures to date, and we'll keep the board informed as we go forward. With that, unless there are questions, I will turn it over to Tom Webster, Managing Director for MBS, who will present the first item.
Thank you, Dennis. This afternoon, staff is seeking committee approval of a request for $35 million of additional FY15 capital budget reprogramming authority in order to move budget authority between existing capital projects in FY15. The additional reprogramming authority will not increase the total capital improvement program budget for FY15, but it will allow for a shift of FY15 capital budget expense authority from projects that are behind schedule or are expected to cost less to projects that are projected to incur higher than planned expenditures in FY15. This additional authority will allow those certain projects to continue without delay. For background, Metro began expenditure-based budgeting in FY 2006. Previously, Metro had used obligation-based budgeting. Under obligation-based budgeting, the project budget is the amount of obligation authority, and expenditures follow over a multi-year period. Under expenditure-based budgeting, the annual project budget is the amount of anticipated expenditure in that given fiscal year. The ability to reprogram budget authority between capital projects is critical in expenditure-based budgeting, in order to accommodate mid-fiscal year changes to project schedules, cost estimates, and to make adjustments when budget errors are identified. Board Resolution 2011-30 grants the general manager the authority to reprogram up to 5% of the approved capital budget each fiscal year. The FY15 capital budget is $1.1 billion, and the general manager's current authority, reprogramming authority, is $55 million. General manager must seek board approval for additional reprogramming authority to cover amounts, additional reprogramming amounts, if necessary. As of today, the total amount of FY15 reprogramming authority already used is $53 million of the $55 million total. The reprogramming actions implemented to date are shown in the information tables that are included in the presentation packet. Please note that the reprogramming actions listed in that table are actions that have already been taken using the existing authority. They're not the future actions. The $2.2 million of remaining reprogramming authority for FY15 is not sufficient to cover the remaining need to shift budget authority between projects. The impact of the proposed reprogramming, the proposed additional FY15 reprogramming will shift budget authority from projects that are delayed or cost less to projects that are ahead of schedule or will have higher than expected costs. Most projects will maintain their overall current total six-year project budget, and only the timing of the expenditure will change, meaning an acceleration or a delay in the budget. Staff recommends that the board authorize $35 million of additional reprogramming authority, approximately an additional 3% of the overall FY15 capital budget. I'll now go through some of the details of the projects that we anticipate updating. We have identified five capital projects so far that are likely to receive additional budget authority through reprogramming actions. Through the detailed review of labor costs for railcar rehabilitation work, we have determined that the railcar rehabilitation project requires additional budget authority to accommodate capital labor expenses in the current fiscal year. Now, previously, some eligible capital labor expenses were planned for and charged to the operating budget. An additional $8 to $10 million of project budget is needed in FY15 to cover these costs. Bus facility repair project has delivered major repairs to three of Metro's core bus facilities, as well as minor repairs and improvements to other facilities. The project is approaching contract closeout and requires additional budget authority to address design changes, contract modifications, and claims. An additional $5 to $7 million is needed in FY15. The environmental compliance project, which includes the Largo Water Treatment Facility, is scheduled to be completed later this year. Additional budget authority is needed to complete the closeout of that project, approximately $1 to $2 million. The escalator replacement project is experiencing an increase in project labor costs due to unforeseen safety requirements when doing work in deep stations. And it was anticipated that an additional $2 to $4 million is required in FY15. And also in FY15, Metro has experienced higher than planned labor costs in delivering the track circuit replacement project, one of Metro's highest priority NTSB recommended safety projects. The project will require additional budget authority in FY15 to deliver the planned program, approximately $4 to $5 million. The overall $35 million request also includes some contingency to give capacity to the general manager to address any issues that come up in the remainder of the fiscal year so the projects will advance without delay. There are a number of delayed projects that are potential candidate projects for from reprogramming actions. Each of these projects is either delayed or has been determined that it costs less. The new electronics payment program has been delayed in implementing the pilot program relative to the plan from last April. And milestone payments originally planned for this year are now forecasted to occur in FY16. So $10 to $12 million of budget authority is available to be reprogrammed from that project. The service vehicle replacement project experienced a delay during the procurement process for the FY15 planned fleet replacement. And a majority of the vehicles that were planned for FY15 will now not be received until FY16, and approximately $5 to $7 million is available from that project in FY15. The Royal Street bus garage replacement will not meet the baseline expenditure forecast for the project due to delays in the permitting process. The issues have since been resolved, but 16 to 20 million in FY15 budget authority is available to be reprogrammed. And finally, the rail operations upgrade project, which was programmed to advance the replacement of the AIM advanced information management system, has been discontinued, and the AIMs will now be updated rather than replaced. So approximately $2 million is available from that project to be reprogrammed. Following this action, staff will finalize the process of identifying the project budget requirements and will implement the reprogramming actions as needed. Staff is also currently in the process of updating the FY15 to 21 proposed six-year capital improvement program to reflect updated project schedules, cost estimates, priorities, and anticipated funding levels. The proposed CIP will also be updated to incorporate any FY15 reprogramming actions that are implemented using this additional authority. We will also return to the committee in May with the third quarter financial and capital program progress updates. We will continue to request FTA reimbursement for the federal share of project costs incurred, and staff will submit a summary report to the board on all FY15 reprogramming actions no later than 90 days following the conclusion of the fiscal year. And finally, staff recommends that the committee and the board approve the proposed resolution authorizing an additional $35 million in general manager capital budget reprogramming authority. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for the presentation. Is there a comment, questions from the board, members? Mary, then Mort.
Thank you very much for the report. It's been several years, as you know, Tom, since we changed this policy, and I've kind of been watching it play out. And when we get to the end of this year, I think we kind of owe ourselves a look back to understand what the major drivers have been of the need for reprogramming. I would note that in several cases, it's unexpected labor costs, and I think the more that the board can understand that, the better off we all will be. But there are other things at play here, whether it's scope creep or unexpected things or change orders. There's always, in these kinds of capital programs, an issue. The other issue I think deserves raising is, you know, in one sense, we have the semblance that this is budget neutral because we have projects that have been delayed. We have capacity to spend. And sometimes we're just reorganizing. But sometimes, in fact, the project is costing more than we anticipated. And so the notion that this is actually happening inside of a box and that there aren't other implications is a bit hidden, I think, to the board. And so I would ask that you also look at that as you look back over these 4 years so that we can understand a little bit better how this actually is working for all of us. And the final comment I would make, and again, this really is all policy related. I think, you know, we kind of have to do these things today. But the last point I would raise is that we do that 5% over the expected, over whatever that big dollar amount is in the budget. And we've not hit that big dollar amount in any of these years. And so the actual percentage of reprogramming of what we're actually spending is considerably more than 5%. And I question whether this is the right metric for us to use moving forward. Might we be instead be looking at a percent of the project, which is something I'm more familiar with in our capital plans that I deal with, or is there a dollar amount where we say, you know what, this absolutely does need to come back to the board one way or the other? We want you to have the flexibility, but we also need to make sure that we have accountability. And I feel like this particular method that we've been using isn't quite getting us where I think we need to be collectively, given where we are as a region. So I would hope, Mr. Chairman, that, you know, we can, when this comes back, we can actually have the right conversation about, is the policy working for us? What have we learned over the 4 years we've implemented it? And what might our options be to provide the appropriate amount of oversight as well as an appropriate amount of flexibility moving forward. Thank you.
All right. Mort?
Yeah, thank you, and I'll echo what Ms. Hines said. In fact, I've been talking with staff about a full-fledged review of our capital program procedures, processes, the nature of the plan itself, whether, in fact, this next month we should adopt a new five-year plan or only a piece of one to accommodate certain high-priority items. But by the time we come to this table a year from now, we should have taken a look at all the ways we manage the program and all that we've learned over the last 5 years and be able to move forward in a better way. One question. I'm very pleased to hear today that we have now received all of the federal grants that we're entitled to receive at this point. That's a major milestone. Another problem we have had with the federal grants is keeping them consistently aligned with the capital program. So I am assuming, but I won't assume, I will ask the question, when we authorize reprogramming, that should also include reprogramming federal grants where it's necessary to do that.
Yes.
And submitting grant amendments where yes. they're needed. So we keep those two things much more closely linked. That's all I had.
Okay. Others?
Mr. Chair?
Oh, sorry.
Thank you. Mr. Webster, I just want to drill down on one of these issues, one of these items, just to get a better understanding of what's going on here, just to follow up on Ms. Hines' observation. On the escalator replacement project, which you give a CIPO 185 or whatever it is, I think you said that the reason for the increase is added labor costs and that these labor costs would add to an additional 2.2 to 4 million. Now, is that two to 4 million just in this current fiscal year, or is that 2 to 4 million on the life of the project?
It's 2 to 4 million in the current fiscal year.
In the current fiscal year.
Yes.
So I assume that means that, well, let me ask the other question first. And maybe this is a question for the interim general manager or deputy general manager. What is it? Are we paying people more? Or are we increasing the staffing level? What is causing a 2 to 4 million increase just in this fiscal year? Because that'll give us some guidance as to where this is now going to continue as the escalator projects continue in future fiscal years.
And Mr. Goldman, it's a fair question. Thank you for asking it. The majority of the increased labor costs for the escalator project is because we're compressing time. When we compress time, it's when we go through the process of, like, for example, closing down when we did DuPont South, when we did the entrance, we closed the entrance down. And the resultant safety factors that we have in case there's an incident that happens within the station itself, how people are deployed, the ability of people to be able to work very quickly to take care of those incidents, and we have people deployed throughout that. So we compress the time, we have more people deployed within that than we would have expected normally if we were to have extended the time and just done it like a piecemeal kind of work. This enables us to pull the escalators out. It's much safer just from a standpoint of not being able to have to, you know, put customers in any harm's way. So that being said, we obviously were very concerned as we saw those escalation costs. And we sat down with our Office of Emergency Management and SAFE, and we said, how can we do this to ensure safety, but with a lesser amount of people, with a lesser amount of engagement? So moving forward, the most recent escalator, which escapes me right now, which we're doing, Lou, do you remember?
Van Ness.
Thank you, Van Ness. We sat down with SAFE and OEM to go through the process of that to say, okay, how can we get those costs in line? So now we're comfortable that the impact won't be nearly as great on those.
So are you suggesting this is just a one-time bump for FY15 and we'll have more at-budget costs in FY16 and out years?
I think there's a one-time bump in FY15. There will be an increase in FY16 and beyond relative to the plan from this time last year because that plan did not factor in even the modified version of the staffing. So there will be an overall increase in the project, but not as much as had the FY15 activity continued at that level.
All right. And just one more question, Mr. Tripp, so I just understand. So, and I think I heard you said there's actually more physical bodies being assigned to a project rather than overtime being paid at a higher rate for
correct.
People.
That's correct.
So that's the kind yes. of mm-hmm. compressing yes. of the project. Thank you.
And that is to accelerate schedule.
Okay, let's move to the next item.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The next item.
Oh, I'm sorry. We had a move. No, didn't take the vote. We're trying to rush it here. We have a motion on the floor. For no further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? No, ayes have it. Thank you. Now on the next item.
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. Item 3B enhances staff accountability with respect to grants management by making three fundamental changes to the board's current policy. The changes are establishing dates and timelines for submitting grant applications, requiring board notifications for any failure to submit grant applications on time as specified in the proposed policy, and perhaps most significantly, setting forth specific limitations with respect to capital project initiation prior to receipt of actual grant awards in order to reduce the risks inherent in the use of prior award authority. As background, Metro adopted a grants management policy last April in response to FTA's FMO audit report. Under the current policy, which was adopted by the board in April, grant applications are required to be submitted to funding agencies within a reasonable time following board adoption of the capital program. And in compliance with that policy and consistent with my report to the board, or rather my announcement this morning, staff has worked diligently to apply for all of the grants available to Metro up to this point. And as I said earlier, we are happy that FTA has approved all of those grants, and we are thankful to FTA for doing so. The new policy, however, with respect to grant application, says that grants have to be submitted 4 weeks after board approval of the capital program, rather than within a reasonable time. And so with the additional requirement that to the extent that staff is unable to meet that timeline, that we notify the board prior to the next scheduled board meeting. In addition, the resolution being proposed also mandates that quarterly reports be provided to the board on the status of all grant applications. I should note that this change codifies the current practice, which the board started earlier this year, in order to provide effective insight into the grant management process by providing you reports, not just with respect to the application, but also what's outstanding and why those projects are outstanding. But with respect to the use of pre-award authority, the new policy makes a distinction between formula grants and discretionary grants. With respect to formula grants, the new policy proposes that with board notification, WMATA can commence work activities. However, with respect to discretionary grants, specific or explicit board approval is required before work can commence on those grants that have not been approved yet. And as you hear a little bit later from Ms. Sullivan, Director of Metro's new Office of Internal Compliance, this distinction between formula and discretionary grants is one example of the evaluation of risks that will enable staff to develop appropriate strategies for managing enterprise risk at Metro. Ms. Sullivan and her team are already working with colleagues across the organization to identify and monitor risks so that we will be much more compliant with these reviews going forward. Overall, these policy changes will ensure greater staff accountability, as I said earlier, and staff recommends board approval of the resolution. Mr. Chairman, that concludes my presentation, and I'll be glad to respond to any questions.
All right, questions? I know they're my staff. They're really just questioning. They have questions related to why WMATA can exercise PREA award authority for PREA and formula grants. This still, leaves the door open for some potential abuse.
I'm sorry.
Why WMATA can exercise PREA award authority for the PREA and the formula grants?
Okay.
Yeah.
So, as you know, consistent with current law, this is part of the current law as well as convention. Because those grants are based on formula, they cannot go to anyone else other than the agency that will ultimately get it. Based on the distribution mechanisms, you know, WMATA is entitled to get those funds. The issue here and what FTA has recognized is that there could be inherent delays in the application process and has therefore allowed agencies similar to Metro to proceed on those projects. With the understanding, obviously, that they're taking some risk, that risk is minimal. Now, with respect to discretionary grants, which are totally based on competitive applications, there's no expectation that WMATA or anybody else will get those grants until formal awards are made. So you are right that there's some risk inherent in that, and that's why I think the proposal that is before you today provides additional transparency with both the amount as well as the reasons why any grants will be outstanding. And compared to where WMATA was a few years ago, I think this is significant progress. And with the follow-up reporting that has been included in this report, you know, you will be asking questions. You will know on a timely basis why these are out there. I think the reason why FTA allows this and the reason why I think it's still appropriate in limited circumstances as proposed here is that for some reason, you know, some of these grants may be delayed by FTA or by congressional action. And so to that extent, unless we are willing as an organization to suspend these projects, then some actions are appropriate. And I think in this case, what is being proposed, you know, is reasonable.
Okay. Thank you. Mort?
Just following up on that, the ability to award contracts before the grant has been made is a blanket authority that Federal Transit Administration makes available to all grantees. I think we were abusing it in that we were making pre-award, we were using funds pre-award for grants that had not even been applied for. If we are doing our application process right and this policy says you can't use pre-award authority until the application is pending, the risk is fairly small. I also want to note, in terms of the application process, we've now received all our grants through fiscal 14. We will be adopting the budget hopefully next month, that's May of 2015. Within 4 weeks after that, you would be making application for our fiscal 15 grants,
that's
which
correct.
Are funds that have already been appropriated by Congress, but we'll be catching up much more on the process of using those funds.
That's correct.
Possibly even getting them obligated before the end of fiscal year 15.
That's certainly the goal.
Yeah. Right. Mary?
Thanks, Mayor Yule. I have one question, and it's kind of a governance procedural question. I'm on page 35 of 60 in our item under the General Manager, Chief Executive Officer. Steph has added some language at the end of that paragraph that says, any modifications to the authority's grant management policies and procedures shall be reported to the board in a timely manner. My concern with this is that our grant management policies were adopted by the board. And my stance would be something adopted by the board can only be changed by the board. I don't think the board adopted the procedures. I think those are administrative.
That's correct.
So I am concerned that we are giving away control of our policies here, perhaps inadvertently. It would be my sense that policies have to be changed by the board. Administrative practices changes in administrative practice should be timely reported to the board. It's probably a very small fix, but I think we should fix it.
I certainly agree with you. I mean, the policy belongs to the board, and the intent was not to change or reduce the authority of the board to make these policies.
So we could just strike policies from this and and just have it read about the procedures?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, Catherine.
The board adopted chapter one. The portion of the policy that was adopted by the board is chapter one of the grants management manual. Mm-hmm. So I think we have a semantic issue, and so we have to be careful with the language that we're using, but I just wanted to make that clear. I think what was intended was to refer to the bulk of the manual that is the policy and procedure that is managed at the staff level and not the board policy. So I think we can certainly clarify that to make it clear, but I wanted you to understand that it all goes together in a single document. And so it looks like one, but in fact, chapter one is the board policy. And certainly that's correct, that that should not be changed without board action, but the rest management policy, implementing the board policy and additional procedure, and I think what's proposed is that that portion of the management policy and procedure be reported to the board, but not be required to be changed by
the board adopted policy.
So perhaps you all can figure, I mean, since this is we're recommending it to the board on the 23rd, you all can figure out what the right language is to capture the sentiment that we've expressed. However, it needs to be adjusted to refer to the right parts. I'm fine with that.
We will. Thanks.
Thank you.
Other questions? Not. let's see. That's an action item. We need a motion.
So moved.
Motion and a second for the discussion. Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those ayes have it. We now go to an information item. This is the financial status update and FMO progress report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, members of the committee. Our objective for this item today is to give you the monthly progress status on Metro's committed corrective action plans in response to the Federal Transit Administration's Financial Management Oversight Review Report. This month's report includes progress through the end of March and will include a brief financial update on our grants management status. And as requested at our last FNA meeting, you'll be hearing from Liz Sullivan, who is our Director of Internal Compliance, will provide an overview of our recently augmented internal compliance activities. As Dennis mentioned before, we received notification of the FTA's final approval of our federal fiscal year 2014 PREA program of projects yesterday, and then the grant was formally awarded as of this morning. And this now brings our total value of grants awarded since January of this year to $733 million. In March, we had grant reimbursement draw approvals of $7 million, of which just under $6 million was drawn, and the balance of which will be drawn upon final approval of the PREA grant, so we'll be able to get all seven now that that's been approved. As you're aware, our credit rating on our $264 million of long-term debt was downgraded one level from AA3 to single A1, which is due to the ramp-up of short-term debt as a tool to support capital project spending and to bridge the restrictions on our federal funds drawdown process. The single A1 rating is still within the investment-grade quality range. Moody's outlook for WMATA was was revised from stable to negative based on a reduced liquidity position and liquidity risk posed by the upcoming LOC renewal dates and our intent to use financing to reduce the LOC balances and provide funding for our capital projects. The FMO dashboard composite contains the standard four charts, completion risk of the 65 cap items by funding level, status of the FMO-related training in key areas, a chart illustrating the quality and acceptance level of recent drawdown packages, and a summary of the number of FTA recommendations fulfilled based on our CAP submissions. This month's FMO dashboard had just one updated focus area since our last report in March, and that's the manual draw submission quality reimbursement request success rates area. Our CAPS completion status remains unchanged. 62 of the 65 CAPS have been submitted to FTA. Two were requested to be extended, and one associated with an advisory comment is due June 30th, and the extension of the two extended caps is they're due as of June 30th also. With respect to our manual draw submission package quality, in March we received reimbursement approvals for three draw packages having a total value of $7 million. Our cumulative reimbursement success rate, which is the approval rate of the total cumulative dollar amounts of manual draw submissions since the imposition of the ECHO draw restriction in late March, remains at 98% through March. From March 2014 through March 2015, $151 million has been drawn down on a total of $194 million worth of drawdown packages submitted. In the month of March alone, draw packages totaling $39.3 million were submitted for review and reimbursement. The FMO compliance training graph reflects the estimated and actual participation in training courses and was unchanged through March. However, given the refinements and procedural responsibility changes incorporated into the grants management manual in recent months, a new round of refresher training is appropriate for all employees with grants management and capital project management responsibility. Our final dashboard quadrant chart reflects the number of CAPs submitted against the 9 material weakness and significant deficiency findings, and the number of FMO report recommendations within those findings that our corrective action plan submissions have been deemed by FDA as having adequately been fulfilled. FMO findings that have been 100% fulfilled are highlighted in green. Based on feedback from FDA on our CAP submissions and follow-up responses submitted from last July through March of this year, the total number of adequately fulfilled FMO recommendations stands at 32.5 out of 38, and the number of findings with completed recommendations is 7 out of 9. The open findings with recommendations still requiring confirmation of corrective action plans are the two you see, budget controls, which is going to be fulfilled with the reconciliation of our aged open grants by June 30th, and access controls over the financial management system, which we addressed and submitted 4 follow-up responses on time that were due on March 20th to FDA. Our summary timeline chart recaps the key major milestone dates of corrective action plans submitted, follow-up requests received, and follow-up submissions provided, all since the final FMO report was issued in June of last year. Since the last board FMO update on March 20th, we submitted our follow-up responses to a letter received from FDA that we received from FDA on February 25th. Addressing the follow-up items for the finding access controls over the financial management system. And as mentioned, with the exception of the 2 extended corrective action plan items, we are up to date on all of our FMO caps, our follow-ups, and responses due to FDA. We've met all due dates, whether committed by us or requested by FDA, for submissions throughout the entire FMO response process. So at this time, I'm pleased to turn the presentation over to Elizabeth Sullivan, WMATA's Director of Internal Compliance, who will provide you an overview of the newly formulated internal compliance process responsibilities, approach methodology, and planned review activities. Liz.
Thank you, Blair. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Our objective for this item today is to provide you with information on the Office of Internal Compliance. Who we are, what we do, our approach, as well as how we interact with other departments within WMATA. The Office of Internal Compliance was established in the fall of 2014 under the leadership of our Chief Financial Officer. I joined the organization the last week of January as its director. Since then, the 3 members of my team and myself, making a total of 4, have been diligently focused on our core responsibilities. The Office of Internal Compliance is responsible for conducting assessments and reviews to monitor WMATA's adherence to financial management controls, related policies and procedures, with a primary focus on compliance with applicable federal regulations that are necessary to preserve WMATA's grant eligibility. Our reviews are designed to evaluate the design and operating effectiveness of financial management controls, as well as compliance controls, which is really a subset of that. Our process fosters greater awareness of risk management and internal controls, as well as we do this by providing needed training and guidance. We partner with other departments within WMATA with financial management control responsibility by evaluating the efficiency and effectiveness of their business processes, as well as assisting them in implementing best practices. Our process also allows us to work complementary and closely with other departments within WMATA that have risk and assurance responsibility.
like the OIG, we work closely with them and talk to them about our plan. We've been able to do that recently. As well, we work with the Office of Performance, who, as the committee is aware, is responsible for the collaborative risk management project under the leadership of WMATA's and executive leadership team. In terms of our approach and methodology, the evaluation of the system of internal controls over financial management is completed by using a top-down risk-based approach. And what that really means is that we understand the overall risk to financial management to WMATA, and specifically compliance risk. And with that, we're able to define and understand the objectives. Understanding the objectives is key to being able to identify the risks to meeting those objectives. Our process allows us, once the risks are identified, to assess this risk and also understand the risk that each department or its focus area that's involved with financial management process allow us to identify the level of risk that's presented by each one of these departments. I talked about earlier understanding the objective as well as the risks, understanding the focus areas and the business areas that are part of the financial management operations area. We also need to understand the controls that they perform. These controls help us to mitigate those risks. All this together represents our process in terms of a risk-based approach. With a reasonable understanding of the risk and the process performed by each one of our business areas, we select for testing the controls that mitigate these risks to a sufficient level. What you have in front of you now is a really snapshot of our risk assessment process. The objective of a risk-based approach is to help direct a higher level of focus on business areas and departments that pose a higher level of risk to financial management operations or compliance as a subset of that to WMATA. So again, to the extent that we can identify a risk level, our review would be aligned with the risk associated with the individual business departments. To support this approach, once each risk is identified within all the departments that are part of this process, they are assessed based on their impact and their probability of occurrence using this 5x5 matrix. This would result in an overall risk rating associated with each one of those departments. The nature, timing, and extent of our reviews or test work completed by our department, again, is aligned with the related risk level. An annual work plan of reviews is then developed, and again, this is based on the risk. So to the extent that we've identified risks, the reviews focus on that area would be commemorated with the risk. Our initial risk assessment process will be completed in June of 2015, at which point, again, each one of these departments and focus areas will be assigned a risk rating. Our risk-based approach really allows us to provide reasonable assurance that the risks that have been identified and assessed have been reduced to an acceptable level. The types of reviews that we perform, again, I mentioned earlier that the nature, timing, and extent of our review is based on the risk. As such, we have different levels of reviews that are performed. In addition to special purpose reviews that may be requested by management, we have four primary reviews that we perform. One of them is a high-level policy review, which the objective of that is to validate directive control points that come up from board policies, as you mentioned earlier, and ensuring that those policies have been properly implemented in our actual administrative procedures, and they have been well put into practice. Another form of review that we complete is a risk and control review, which is conducted to confirm the design of the controls to ensure the controls are properly designed to mitigate the associated risk. When we conduct risk and control reviews, we're able to identify the likely causes of these risks so that they're appropriately mitigated in terms of the design of the control. Another form of review that we perform is a control validation. Control validations are completed to determine whether controls are functioning. Once they're designed appropriately, we also want them to function appropriately. When we perform control validations, our process requires or allows us to use standard test methods, which could include inspection of relevant documentation, observation of controls in operation, reperformance of controls to confirm that they were in fact performed or executed appropriately, inquiry of appropriate staff, And in some cases, when it warrants it, we do data analysis to ensure the root cause is being identified and resolved or appropriately reacted to. Our process also allows us to facilitate controlled self-certifications, which is a really good process because at this point we are pulling in those that are responsible for these controls into the review process. The results of our reviews are compiled and reported to management. Management is expected to respond to all deficiencies identified, and appropriate resolution should be provided. Our office reviews and manages deficiencies all the way through resolution. What you have now is a summary of activities that we've performed so far. Since we're working on our risk assessment to drive this process in the meantime, we have in fact identified 18 reviews that have been scheduled through June of 2015, the June 30th date. Our primary focus are FMO follow-up cap areas, and we've been completing reviews appropriately in those areas. Of the 18 reviews that are scheduled, as of the time of the report you have in front of you, 3 had been completed, 10 were in process, and 5 reviews had a future start date. A more recent update, we have since completed 2 of those reviews. Over the next 6 months, we plan to, again, complete our risk assessment, help drive compliance and internal control awareness and accountability by training and providing support as needed, continue with our follow-up CAP reviews, as well as follow-up activities that are associated with reviews that are completed. At this point, this concludes my section of this report. Mr. Chairman, I will turn this over to Mr. Fishburne.
Thanks, Liz. And I want to close just by reviewing our next steps. We remain committed to achieving the progress milestones for the 2 extended corrective action plan items due by June 30th. And we will continue conducting the monthly progress review status meetings with the FDA Region 3 staff as we have committed. And as you heard from Liz, our internal compliance staff will continue to conduct follow-up reviews and implement long-term compliance monitoring to help ensure ongoing compliance with the FMO caps and enhancement of internal controls. Mr. Chairman, that concludes this month's FMO update report. And at this time, Ms. Sullivan and I would be happy to answer any questions from the committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And certainly this is a step in the right direction in terms of, you know, having an internal compliance office to monitor and help train and make sure that we're doing everything in a timely manner. So certainly appreciate that. Questions, comments? Mort?
One question, one request. With respect to the downgrade, it's my understanding we still have as strong or stronger credit than any other revenue-based borrowing in the transit industry.
It is certainly not the weakest credit rating in the transit industry, but there are some that have better ratings. And obviously, our view is that the organization, that the ratings action that they took is inconsistent with the actions that we are taking to address the environment that they are attempting to address.
And with respect to the compliance office, one of the things I think has been very helpful for the board in the safety arena is getting regular reports on the corrective action plans and how they are being completed. I suggest you look at that safety cap report and see if we can get something comparable to that on a regular basis.
I turn my mic up. We can certainly do that. I know we provide the quarterly matrix right now, which just gives you a summary of the reviews. We can certainly provide a report similar to that.
Get the granularity of what is being corrected and has it been done.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Just a comment. Oh, sorry.
Oh, go ahead, Mrs. Lee. And then Iris. All right. Artis?
This mine is just a comment. And I know Jack is going to laugh. I was once chief of compliance for the District of Columbia, so old compliance person to another. This is really sort of a question about your philosophy and approach, that compliance is popular now, but it's been around for a long time, and the approach of discipline and accountability balance with incentives. And so I'd like to get a sense of your philosophy. Second question, maybe this is one for Blair. I know that we are moving along with training, but one of the questions that we ask in higher education all the time is how do we know they know what we taught them? And so what are the things we're doing to reinforce the training, and how do we make it stick?
Okay. I believe the first question was about accountability. How do we hold people accountable, and then in terms of incentives as well? I think it's certainly important to reward good behavior as well as when we address bad behavior. From our perspective, in terms of holding people accountable, when you look at our process, the form of review that we complete, that's called the control certification, that really allows the people that are accountable for these controls or these activities that are actually our compliance tasks to ensure and be pulled into the review process. They certify that they are actually performing these activities or these controls. So they take ownership of that, and we provide them with an opportunity to self-report instances of non-compliance, as well as an opportunity to be proactive at creating corrective action. So in terms of accountability, I think that, that helps there to make them aware and make them accountable of their responsibilities. Obviously, in terms of when things are done right, we will look for more opportunities to support it and provide feedback from that perspective. I know that managers typically are responsible for rewarding good behavior, and that's certainly something we could consider in terms of how that would flow up from our process as well.
With respect to the training, we have we have committed to offer refresher training to particularly in the grants management area to for capital project managers and any new staff. We also are starting to work with HR to incorporate the training both in procurement and grants management procedures to new employee orientation training as well.
There's some creative things we can do using technology. Since we know the employees who have been trained, there are lots of instruments we can use that really sort of pop up on their computer, and it's really a game, but it's reinforcing the training that's been done that's very popular and very effective.
We will certainly look into that and see if there are opportunities to incorporate that into what we're trying to do, because the goal here ultimately is to have an environment that is much more compliant than what it has been in the past. And our approach has been, for the most part, to partner with the respective agencies to make sure that we are quite proactive in identifying those opportunities for improvement and working with all affected parties to not just highlight the successes, but also our weaknesses to make sure that we all are clear on what our obligations are and hopefully working towards resolving those. So if you don't mind, we'll follow up with you and just to get a better sense of what we can do.
Make it fun.
We will love to.
Tell you it really works when you make it fun.
Other questions, comments? Yeah.
Thank you very much for your presentation. It's very encouraging. I just wanted to know, from a program design standpoint, is there a reference point that you're using? I mean, is this a federal model? Is this a public authority model, a municipal model, a private sector corporate model? Is there an institution that we could point to as a comparator?
So this is actually very similar to any process that you would see from an assurance standpoint. We certainly we've borrowed from the COSO framework, which is a standard and accepted framework that allows us to evaluate the system of internal control. Thank you. So that's one where it obviously points to the objective as the starting point, identifying the risks to meeting those objectives as that, and then as well as the controls mitigating those objectives. That's really one that we would model our process against in terms of the framework. It's one that's accepted by the public entity. It's one that, in terms of what other people are doing, we've talked to other transit agencies that also have control functions within them. They're using similar processes. It's very close to an audit model, what an auditor would do as well. Sure. So because our objective is to validate these controls or audit or test them, we use a similar approach, understanding the objective, the risk, and the controls that mitigate those risks.
In the transit industry, who does this really well?
So we've talked to some, at least I personally have talked to some, and in terms of how they're set up, they're done differently. In speaking to New York, I know they have expectations from the state in terms of control certifications that they have to do. And they have a department that allows them to facilitate that separate from like their audit department. So I can't say that they do it well, but just from talking to them, that was a good reference point. I also know that other transit agencies have internal audit departments that are separate from the OIG that also are responsible for this type of evaluation. I know LA Metro was another one that I spoke to. So again, can't speak to whether or not they do that well. However, knowing that there are these kinds of functions in other transit agencies, I think what we did here is definitely the right approach as well.
How about CTA? Do you know? Chicago?
Yeah.
Oh.
You ever been there?
Yeah, Dennis, talk about that.
Well, I think I can share some experiences with respect to CTA. As Ms. Sullivan has indicated, I think CTA certainly does it differently. I think what we have, although it's at the initial stages, will ultimately be much more robust than at least my experience while I was there. But again, I think the fundamentals, whether in the private sector or in the public sector, the fundamentals are the same. You're trying to identify a risk. You're trying to do that across the enterprise, and you're trying to establish effective controls to make sure that at least you understand that risk, that you understand the consequences of that risk to the extent that it occurs, and trying to figure out, you know, the right strategy to address that. Ultimately, it's a resource allocation issue. But understanding the level of risk and the potential consequences then gives you the baseline for constructing a response strategy to the extent that any of those risks occur.
Okay. One final question on that topic. Who do you report to?
I report to Ms. Dennis Oki.
To who?
Dennis.
Oh, okay. Good. And then one question, Blair, with regard to the success rate on the reimbursements, should we assume that the 2% that was not reimbursed, is that a permanent rejection, or could there be reapplication for that amount?
No, generally that's the 2% reflects the amount that when we did an initial submission that they had either required additional documentation, but eventually then we'll get that money. We anticipate getting that money drawn. They're not ineligible costs. They're just because of the manual drawdown process, we were asked to provide some additional documentation. It could be contract documentation, invoice documentation, things like that.
So it's reasonable to expect that it could be 100%?
Yes, eventually we expect to be 100% of all of our draws.
To,
yes.
to add additional context, there are outstanding issues with respect to grant applications that we are currently in conversations with FTA about, which speaks to your question. So until and unless that's resolved, we will not, there's still some risk in terms of the totality of expected reimbursements going forward with respect to prior funds.
Okay. Thank you.
Other question? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have questions in a couple of areas, and you may have to provide us with this information. First, with the bond rating, it is a real big deal to get downgraded. Having worked with the District of Columbia, where we started out as a B and took 20 years to get up to the AA status, I can tell you it's a problem. So if you could, first of all, let me ask this question. Are we rated by all three agencies or just one? There's Moody's, Fitch, and Standard & Poor's.
We are rated by two agencies, Moody's and Standard & Poor's.
Okay. Could you prepare for the committee, for all of us, a chart? And we have this in the district. That starts with when we first got rated to the present, what our bond ratings have been over the course of time. Did we first get rated when? When we started in 76 or back in the 90s? Or when did we first get a bond rating? I don't know the answer to that. But I'd like to see the history of our bond ratings. And then secondly, I would like to see the bond ratings of the other transit authorities, maybe the top 10 transit authorities. What are their bond ratings for both, or for all three, if all three are rating them, or for two or however many are rating them? Okay, so we can put a chart together like that that lays out the history and where we are. Now, you said they've downgraded us not only to an A1, but they put us on a negative watch, which
That's
is
correct.
Unusual.
That's
now,
correct.
Negative watch, are we looking for the next shoe to drop that's going to drop us from an A1 to an A2 or an A3 or into the B status, which is a real problem? So what was your feedback from them as to why they put us on the negative watch?
As Blair indicated, the negative outlook relates to the near-term cash flow expectations based on the LOC expirations, which will be occurring in June, and the bond repayment, which will be occurring later in October. Obviously, their conclusion is that until and unless those are addressed, the outlook needs to be negative. As you know, and as I've indicated to this board, with respect to the $200 million loan, we have a sinking fund reserved for that, which at this point has or contains significant amounts of money that will go towards that repayment. So we are confident of meeting that timeline. And with respect to the lines of credit, as we've again indicated in the past, we continue, not just with this committee, but also with the jurisdictions, we continue to talk to the organizations with respect to their appetite for an extension, while obviously this board has already authorized issuance of loans that will go towards repaying some of those. So we feel that we had already put in place proactively steps to address those, but obviously their conclusions were different.
Okay, now what about the audit? Now, it's been promised we're going to have an audit in April. I don't know if we're going to have an audit in April. If the audit comes back poorly, is that part of the negative outlook that they've put on the agency here?
Well, I think based on your experiences with the district, you know that the final rating is a result of several things.
Right.
In this case, the date indicate obviously the audit is late, but the quality of the final product was not a factor in their determination. I don't know what if that's the reason why they said so, but it was not indicated to us when we spoke to them or in their final report as to why they concluded the way they did. The audit, as the audit committee was informed this morning, is still working towards a resolution consistent with the timeline that was provided to that committee. Obviously, there's significant challenges. Again, based on not what's happening today, based on what happened years ago, and obviously we are all working really hard to address those. I think at this point, we don't know what the external auditor will ultimately conclude. Obviously, they've given us a sense that you know they're having challenges and that will impact their ultimate decision. But I don't know that there will be additional ratings action as a result of a finding that's inconsistent with a clean audit, at least not from Moody's.
Okay. Just some advice. We need to keep in constant contact with the agency, rating agencies, because to drop from the A category into the B category would be horrific. And I just don't want to see that happen. Dropping from a double A into the A category is not a good thing. So we just need to make sure that doesn't happen. Go ahead, Jack.
Just for the record, since my arrival here, we've spoken to both agencies on at least three occasions proactively. We did not wait for them to contact us. We advised them when we issued the $200 million GANs to make sure and Board Member Downey was aware of that conversation, because this board wanted us to be both transparent and proactive, yeah, and we will continue to do that.
No, that's important. Okay, the second part of this is the Moody's report itself, and this is another chart I'd request from you. They clearly focused in on the unfunded liabilities. And so chart number, the next chart would include two things. It says we're funding, or we have 76% of our pension liability. We have it funded, but it says that the authority's other post-employment benefits liabilities total $2 billion and are completely unfunded. So clearly we're funding those out of operating dollars, and also the unfunded pension liability to the extent part of it may be coming out of operating dollars. I don't know the answer to that. But what I'd like to do is put a chart together. How much out of operating dollars every year are we funding these two, the pension and the health care, and what's the growth rate? And as a percentage of our total operating dollars. So it may be a situation, I mean, this is endemic across the country. It's what Detroit faced, it's what Chicago's facing, it's what everybody's facing. How much are we going to expend out of our operating budget every year to paying these obligations versus our total budget? Again, I always use the district as an example. In 1995, we had a totally unfunded pension liability. So at 2010, we fell off the cliff. Every dollar coming into the district would go to pay the pension. So that had to be corrected. Where is Metro in this? If we do nothing and they're paying everything out of operating dollars, at what point do we run out of dollars to fund the health care, the retirement for the health care and the pension liabilities, okay?
Okay.
Okay. And then I had one final question, and I'll be done here. Mort, when you said we've gotten all of our grant money, and I don't want to paraphrase what you said, for 2014 we've gotten all of our grant money?
All of the grants for 2014 have now been made to us. We haven't drawn them down yet. They're available.
So the money is there for us to get? Okay. So we've applied for the grants. They've been accepted and approved. So how much?
Exactly up to date on those.
Okay. So how much money is that?
A total federal share of $734 million has been awarded since about mid-January. Added to the previously awarded grants remaining balances, we have somewhere between $900 and $950 million of grant capacity at FTA for future drawdown.
Yeah. So, again, my understanding is we drew down on our lines of credit to pay for
ongoing work
because we couldn't get the grant money.
Now the grants are there.
So is the intent to draw down on the grant money and pay off the lines of credit? And if so, when, how, can we, what do we have? What's our outstanding lines of credit? $500 million, something like that?
No. The lines of credits as facilities about $302 million.
Okay.
We have drawn those. As I indicated in the past. So, but our goal is with these approvals and with the last set of approvals to aggressively request reimbursements based on expended expenses on capital projects. Obviously, we can't draw down what has not been expended. But our goal, and which is why Blair reported a little bit earlier, that the flow of capital funds back to us is improving, consistent with those additional grant approvals. There's a piece, as I indicated a little bit earlier, that still has some noise around them and with respect to timekeeping. And except for those, we are working to identify the appropriate documentation needed to substantiate those expenses associated with with ongoing capital projects. And we are working aggressively to draw down on every penny.
I'm not following. Is the money available that we can immediately get it or not?
Well, yes, they are, but you can't. But you still have to submit evidence of expenses, and that evidence is based on the invoices, the vouchers. All of those things have to be provided to FTA.
Mark, when you say the money's available, it's not available.
It's available if we can show that
So we have to
wait for Congress. We don't have to wait for the FTA.
But we have to. We have to give them
the documentation.
And do we have the documentation? The rumor mill is we don't. We do, right?
Yes, we have the documentation. They're not in perfect order, but we do have the documentation,
we do have.
That's why.
Okay.
Yes. Except for the timekeeping piece, which documentation does not exist because it was inconsistent with the practice at that point. With respect to invoices to contractors, we have the documentation. Again, part of the challenge is that this goes back to 2012, 2013,
yeah.
And so going back to identify those original sources is taking a little bit of time. But those documentations are there, and we are confident that at the end of the day, most of these funds, if not all of them, will be recovered.
Because it seems to me a strategy we should be looking at is if the bond rating agency has us on a negative outlook because of our outstanding lines of credit, one of the reasons anyway, and if we have access to this money, we should get the money and pay down the lines of credit, which may help us get out of the mess we're in with the bond rating agencies.
Absolutely.
Yes. But what you're saying is we may have the documents, but we may not have all the documents.
We are assembling those documents.
We're trying to get the documents.
Right, and we are submitting them as we speak.
Okay.
Now, there's about almost $50 million of requests that FTA's PMOs is reviewing, which means these are documents that we've submitted to them. They're looking at that, and once they're comfortable with that submission, they'll say, okay, go ahead, they'll turn on back the process, and we can draw down those funds. There is a process for drawing down those funds, and we are complying with that process.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Other questions, comments? All right, if not, thank you very much, staff, for the presentation. That concludes the meeting for today, and see you next time.